All right, part two. Another person has written in to say, hi, Daryl. Firstly, I would like to express my appreciation for having encountered an expression so early in my so-called spiritual seeking, which for me so thoroughly and comprehensively dismantles a huge spectrum of unnecessary preconceptions. I'm going to paraphrase this next portion. He goes on to say that he's realized that coming to a sense of ease with life, or coming to a sense of compassion in life, he sees that it cannot really come from doing certain practices or living within certain moral constraints, that really it comes more from an acknowledgement of seeing that we're not ultimately in control of life, and that life will simply present itself in whatever way it presents itself. So from that acknowledgement, there is more of a sense of ease with life, because it will simply play out in whatever way it's going to play out. And there is a compassion in life, because there's the acknowledgement that whatever someone is doing, they're not ultimately in charge of that, that they simply have to be expressed in whatever way nature is expressing them. And he then comes to a question. He says, finally, the question. As I am right now, I am still caught up in the drama of my dreams when I'm asleep. I still see myself as a little subject desperately trying to control apparent objects within the so-called dream world. Of course, this sense still exists when I am apparently awake, but it is much stronger when I'm asleep. As one's sense of this inexpressible happening deepens, will there come a point when one stops believing in one's dreams without ever practicing lucid dreaming or dream analysis? I'm studying counseling psychology, and I've started looking into dream analysis. I can see its limitations. Nevertheless, the process of noticing and observing one's dreams at least seems to serve a purpose, in that it can reveal how we unnecessarily create difficulties for ourselves when we ultimately have no control. Moreover, the practice of lucid dreaming apparently goes a step further, in that it enables the dreamer to become aware that the dreamer is dreaming. From a non-dual perspective, do you feel that dream analysis, lucid dreaming, or any other forms of psychotherapy can be useful in dismantling the fantasy in one's sleep? Or is it enough to sit quietly doing nothing for extended periods of time? So this seems to be not such a common concern for people in general. I mean, this person seems to have a great deal of sensitivity to his dream states. He seems to be able to explore the situation of lucid dreaming. He has a strong interest in that sort of thing, an interest in dream analysis. So lucid dreaming is basically being conscious that one is dreaming, and in a way it could be like waking up inside a dream and acknowledging that it is a dream. And he's saying that within the dream he has an even stronger sense that he's somebody in charge. Even stronger than when he's awake. So he's wondering, is lucid dreaming or dream analysis useful in dismantling the fantasy in one's sleep, or is it enough, he says, to just sit quietly doing nothing for extended periods of time? Now, he's making reference to the fact that if we sit and we make no effort, it becomes more and more obvious that everything we are is simply presented automatically. Because if we sit and we make no effort to do anything in particular, the whole process that we are still presents itself. And at some point, we will be compelled to get up and leave the room. We will be compelled to participate in life in some way. associate with friends. If we're hungry, we need to get money in order to eat, in order to buy food, in order to eat. So if we're not born into a rich family, then we will probably have to go get a job at some point. And all of that will be compelled, because all of it is the movement of nature. Nature simply expresses us with our own particular needs, interests, concerns, urges, abilities, our lack of abilities, our talents, our lack of talents. And although I don't really know what would be necessary for someone to drop their sense of control within the world of dreams, I would say that if you come to realize very deeply in your waking state that you are an expression of existence itself, that you are not ultimately influencing the movement of life, if that is to be seen, if that's seen in a very deep way in your waking state, there probably won't be the sense that you're in control in your dream state. Because it won't make any sense at all on any level, the notion that you're in charge. All right, another person has written in saying, "Hi Daryl, I was listening to your interview on Consciousness TV and I thought I heard you say that you didn't really have relationships throughout your life. I'm assuming you meant romantic relationships ending in marriage as well. I'm a 52-year-old woman and I find myself in the same situation. I'm unable, it seems, to have intimate relationships, and I never really have been in one. I just recently made a go at it again and was unable to make the connection. Being that close to another human being seems to be too much for me, and I sabotage it. I was wondering if this was maybe a bit to do with being on the quest for enlightenment most of my life. I've read a lot on your webpage. I understand it and believe it to be true, the nature of reality. But it is not a living reality for me. I still get caught up in the clouds, but would love the realization to come that I'm the space the clouds appear in and not the clouds. I've got it better now than I used to. My life is less personal. Do you think you could talk a bit on why you think you were unable to have relationships, if I understood you correctly?" I don't think I said that I didn't have any relationships throughout my life. I can't really remember what I said in that interview on Consciousness TV, but if I said anything about relationships, it's probably that I've had, if I was making reference to intimate relationships, I probably was pointing out that I've been in and out of a number of intimate relationships, and that life hasn't really offered me one intimate relationship that lasted a lifetime. I'm more of a serial monogamist, meaning basically that I've just been in and out of a number of intimate relationships throughout my life, as well as my usual friendships in life. Now, this person is asking me to explain why it is that I haven't had that one lifetime relationship, and I have no idea why I haven't. If we look at the situation here in North America, the situation of intimate relationships, we discover that in about 50% of the cases, a lifetime relationship seems to work, and in about 50% of the cases, it doesn't seem to work. And those people will have a number of different intimate relationships in their lifetime. I don't claim to understand the reasons for people having a lifetime commitment in a relationship. I've known couples who have been together for 40 years, and every morning when they wake up, they argue throughout the day, their relationship is very difficult, and yet that relationship probably will not end. It's lasted 40 years, and it will probably last until the end of their life. And I've known other couples who got along amazingly well. They were totally harmonious in all the different aspects of their relationship, and that relationship didn't last longer than 3 or 4 years. So I don't claim to understand why people stay together or why they don't stay together. From this non-dual sensibility, it's just the way life expresses itself. I don't see one as being more valid than the other. These are just the various ways that life expresses apparent human beings. I also want to comment on this person saying that she's read a lot on my webpage, she understands it, and she believes it to be true, but she still gets caught up in the clouds and would love the realization to come that she's the space that the clouds appear in. Nowhere on my website do I say that anybody's going to have the realization that they're the space that clouds appear in. I point out that as far as I'm concerned, all of life is like the movement of a cloud. It's just a totally, it's just a big happening that has no particular form. It's moving and shifting and dancing in whatever way it moves and shifts and dances, and that it's not anybody's personal doing. In the same way that a cloud has no particular form, it moves and shifts and dances, and it's nobody's particular doing. So that's what I'm expressing on the website. Ultimately, that leaves us, you know, if we relate to that perspective, if we relate to that consideration, what we have is the happening of this moment and the realization that even though it appears to have form, everything that seems to be form is changing. So this particular happening of this moment has no particular form. It moves and shifts and dances in whatever way it moves and shifts and dances. And we're part of this happening of this moment. We're part of the totally unexplainable, unformed, moving and shifting and dancing event of this moment. So that's what the Buddhist teaching ultimately calls Buddha nature or Buddha mind, just this totally unexplainable happening the way it happens. It's what the Taoists call the way. They liken it to the flowing of a river. In Christianity, it's ultimately what is the Great Spirit. For most indigenous cultures, it is what might be called the Great Spirit. Some call it God. Some call it Atman. All of these are simply pointing to the totally unexplainable, unformed happening of this moment and the fact that we do not exist as anything apart from that happening. We're an expression of this happening, and ultimately we do not influence this happening. Okay, another person has written in saying, "Hi Daryl, addiction, whether addiction to alcohol, drugs, sex, gambling, etc., has become a major health problem in the US and the world. From a non-dual perspective, what is addiction? Namaste. Thanks for your response." Okay, addiction from a non-dual perspective. Addiction is once again one of the natural expressions of existence. everything is a natural expression of this totally unexplainable happening that we might call existence, or the universe, or the Great Spirit, the river of life, the unformed ocean of existence. Just this happening of this moment that has no particular form, it has no possible true explanation. We do not exist as anything apart from this happening, simply happening, simply presenting itself. So addiction is one of the natural expressions of this happening. So from this sensibility, the movement to addiction is not anybody's personal doing. The urge to stay within an addiction is not anybody's personal doing. And the movement out of an addiction is not anybody's personal doing. And you can see this within certain programs like Alcoholics Anonymous. One of the main elements of that program is that even though they offer all kinds of considerations and explorations in order to explore the possibility of moving away from an addiction, they ultimately acknowledge that whatever happens can only happen with the help of a greater power. So that if there is going to be a movement away from an addiction, it can only happen through the grace of a greater power. Now, they often use the word God, but they will say that that greater power they might call God, but you can call it whatever you feel you need to call it. So you could also call it just the movement of life, or the movement of the universe, or the greater mysterious happening of existence. But whatever is going to happen within that AA program will only happen through that greater power. And this brings up something that a number of people have been asking me about recently. One friend in particular was saying, how do we really, how do we explore the world of health and the whole notion of doing healthy things, and at the same time have the impression that all of this is the totally automatic expression of the Great Spirit or the River of Life or whatever? Because often when people hear that all of it is the greater dance of the universe or God or whatever, they get the impression that if you really acknowledge that, then you'll just sit around doing nothing for the rest of your life. Because why bother doing anything? Everything is the expression of God. And that's true in a certain way, but it's not actually true in a certain way. What this is saying is not that if you acknowledge this, you will just sit around doing nothing for the rest of your life. It's saying that whatever you're doing now, and if that's, you know, if you have an urge to towards a certain addiction, or you have an urge to stay within an addiction, or you have an urge to leave an addiction, and you have an urge to explore all apparent ways of dropping an addiction, that all of that is not your personal doing. So a non-dual perspective isn't saying, why bother doing anything? A non-dual perspective is simply the acknowledgement that whatever you're doing, whatever you seem to be doing in this particular moment, is not your personal doing. You haven't ultimately caused it. Because we don't cause our particular needs, our particular concerns, our interests. We don't create our abilities or our lack of abilities. So we ultimately don't create anything else. It's just a very simple acknowledgement. So it's not that in acknowledging this larger happening of existence, we'll then just sit around doing absolutely nothing. It's the acknowledgement that we're going to apparently be doing something, because that's the compulsive expression of existence. We will have needs, we will have interests, we will have concerns, and we will function in whatever way we can with whatever abilities life seems to be giving us. So we will be doing, apparently doing something, but it's the acknowledgement that all of that is not our personal doing. It's simply life playing out in whatever way life is presenting itself. A lot of people can't relate very strongly to this bottom line sense that there's just this totally mysterious happening the way it happens. So another way of relating to this might be through the sense that all of life is a gift, and life gives each apparent person certain needs, certain interests, certain concerns, a certain sensibility in life, and it also gives each apparent person certain talents and a lack of talents, certain abilities and a certain lack of abilities. So a non-dual perspective is, we could say in a way that a non-dual perspective is simply saying, by all means, do whatever you have to do using the gifts that life has given you. Live your life with the sensibility that life has given you and the talents and abilities that life has given you. And simply realize that all of it is a gift. That's all that this particular question is bringing up. Another person has written in saying, "Hi, Daryl. I was just listening to one of your talks and..." Oh, this is somebody who's written in earlier. He says, "I was just listening to one of your talks and I have one more question which you might like to address at some point. I noticed that on the one hand, you maintain that all perspectives on life are equally valid, yet at the same time, you suggest that ultimately each story is simply a fantasy. While I understand the points you are trying to make, given their respective contexts, the term fantasy comes with a lot of connotations. I looked up the definition of fantasy, which is the activity of imagining things that are impossible or improbable. With this in mind, the use of the term fantasy seems to imply a certain dismissal of all of life's perspectives as in fact invalid. I noticed this especially during my early readings of your book, Dismantling the Fantasy. Here you talk of the fantasy self pursuing its desire for wholeness through relationship, money, power, education, psychology, therapy, religion, spirituality, yoga techniques, meditation techniques, insight, understanding, and so on, when none of this achieves the sense of wholeness that we all strive for. I still have my various interests in relationship, psychology, and education, and when I first read your book, I interpreted it as a dismissal of all these things. Now that I have a greater sense of your message, I see that that is not what you mean, and I can happily make a living out of psychology without thinking I'm kidding myself or seeing it as an invalid pursuit. I just no longer see it as my salvation. Nevertheless, for those people who do believe that their perspective leads toward their ultimate salvation, would you maintain that they live in a fantasy world? And if so, how do you consolidate that with the sense of that their perspective is still valid? ultimately, from my own apparent perspective, I have no qualm with this apparent contradiction, and I am happy to accept this as a paradox, which by necessity comes with the dualistic process of thinking and using words. Nevertheless, speaking to someone who communicates this sensibility through publishing books and holding public talks, you might be interested in sharing your own apparent insights into this. Warm regards. This is, again, from this non-dual sensibility, there is the acknowledgement that none of the stories that we have about existence apply. None of the descriptions that we have of existence apply. So, I mean, all of these stories are basically pointing to apparent forms, and they're describing apparent forms, and the labels for those apparent forms are just ultimately meaningless sound. They only take on meaning when they point to an apparent form, and all of us in our apparent life journey will ultimately begin to say that everything in life is changing, so all these apparent forms are actually changing. Science will ultimately tell us that within the world of quantum physics, there are no actual things, there is just process, and they are attempting to describe life ultimately as an undivided body of energy, simply moving and shifting in the way it does. So, I mean, from this non-dual perspective, it's acknowledging that descriptions of existence do not apply. They are not a true explanation of what's going on here. The world of thought contains so much essential contradiction that it declares itself invalid as far as saying anything true about existence. So from that acknowledgement, all storylines are fantasy. However, from that acknowledgement, it's also the acknowledgement that the world of apparent thought is a totally mysterious happening simply presenting itself. So all of the presentations of this totally unexplainable happening are the legitimate expression of this totally mysterious happening. Each and every apparent person is a totally legitimate and valid expression of this totally unexplainable happening, because there is just this happening presenting itself. Now, the storylines that I present within my books and in this website are simply a consideration of the world of stories and a consideration of the conflicts and contradictions that exist within those worlds of stories. And ultimately, it's the acknowledgement that the storyline itself ultimately declares itself invalid. I'm not going to go into all the details of that at this moment. I mean, if someone's interested, again, they can listen to the main talks on this website. They can listen to any of the responses I've given over the last couple of years. They can get hold of my books and consider what's being presented there. But as I'm always pointing out, I'm saying even this non-dual sensibility, even this non-dual perspective, isn't the one true way of looking at life. It's just one of life's mysterious happenings. So again, this is the acknowledgement that no description of existence actually applies to what's happening here. And yet, You know, even to say that there are descriptions of life is not ultimately true. The word description is a totally meaningless sound. And what's it pointing to? You know, this flowing event that we call thought, but that has no particular form. It's just a moving, shifting, dancing event. So even to say that there are descriptions of existence is not ultimately true. But the happening, this happening that we call description, the basic happening of existence, everything that's being in that happening, everything that's being expressed, is a valid expression of that happening, because from this non-dual perspective, there is simply a totally mysterious happening presenting itself. All of its expressions are valid, because if we can't possibly say what it is, we can't possibly say that there's anything wrong with it. And that's all that's coming up in response to this question. Another person has written in saying, "Hi, Daryl. I don't have a specific question, but I would love to hear your thoughts on paralogical thinking as explained here." And in his email, he attached a link to a short video that had Timothy Freak explaining this paralogical thinking. It's some term that he's come up with. Now, I didn't listen to the entire video, but I listened to enough to get a sense of what he was talking about. He was basically saying the idea that life is both an absolute mystery and a person knowing a world, that in order to understand the depths of existence, you have to be able to think both of these things, that both are true, that life is ultimately an absolutely mysterious happening, and it's a person knowing existence. And he's saying to understand the depths of existence, you have to be able to think both these things. Now, I don't think existence has any real depth to understand. There's just a totally mysterious happening, simply happening, totally unexplainable happening. Simply happening. However, I'm not going to take issue with what Timothy Freak was presenting, because I think it's just a matter of semantics. I think this is his way of ultimately acknowledging the totally unexplainable happening of life, but also acknowledging that this is not a dismissal of thought, that our world of concepts, our various storylines, are, from a non-dual perspective, are simply held within the embrace of this larger acknowledgement that all of it is a totally unexplainable happening. It isn't my particular way to invent a word called paralogical, or invent a phrase called paralogical thinking and then describe it in this particular way. But it seems like one way that a person can present this non-dual perspective. Another person has written in saying, "Hi, Daryl. Thanks for all your offerings here on this site and your books as well. They've certainly helped me rest a little easier. I was wondering if I could get your thoughts regarding how, if at all, one reconciles this non-dual perspective with certain psychological approaches. I realize we do act and say whatever we are compelled to do, and it'll all flow in whatever way it does, but for those who are suffering from depression, anxiety, addictions, etc., taking this passive approach of sitting back and allowing everything to flow by obviously doesn't help one get out of it. So I'm wondering, is it possible to hold this non-dual perspective while still apparently actively engaging the thought realm, challenging and reprogramming damaging thoughts and behaviors, having a sense that everything is flowing by automatically and unformed, while also having an apparent confident sense of self, purpose, and control to not be run over by excessive and unnecessary thoughts, feelings, and actions? Thanks and kind regards. So yes, as I was explaining earlier, not only is it possible to have the sense that everything is flowing automatically and is ultimately unformed, while at the same time having an apparent sense of self, a confident sense of self, purpose, and control in order not to be run over by excessive and unnecessary thoughts, feelings, and actions. Not only is it possible to have that, those two sensibilities. I mean, ultimately, if you are drawn to a non-dual sensibility, you will be compelled to have both of those sensibilities because, as I was explaining earlier, to acknowledge that everything that's happening in this moment is ultimately unexplainable, that it's simply presenting itself, and that we don't exist as anything apart from the self, from that we don't, the self does not exist as anything apart from this happening. With that acknowledgement of this greater mysterious happening simply happening on its own, that's not a dismissal of the world of thought. It's not a dismissal of our daily activities. It's simply the acknowledgement that whatever sense of life we have in this moment, whatever makes sense to us, whatever needs we have, whatever interests we have, and whatever apparent activities are the result of those needs and interests and concerns, whatever abilities we have to function in the world, none of that is our personal doing. That all of that is the compelled expression of existence. It's the dance of this larger, mysterious, unexplainable happening that we might call the happening of this moment, or the dance of the universe, or the Great Spirit, or God, or whatever. So, you know, as this person has phrased it, he says, for those who are suffering from depression, anxiety, addictions, etc., taking this passive approach of sitting back and allowing everything to flow by obviously doesn't help one get out of it. But as I was pointing out earlier, to truly acknowledge this totally mysterious happening of this moment isn't telling you to sit down and do nothing and allow everything to flow by. To sit and make no effort, is simply an obvious way of acknowledging that everything you are is simply being expressed. It's not your doing. But to sit and make no effort doesn't mean you will be able to continue sitting and making no effort. It's pointing out to you that even if you tried to sit and make no effort, you wouldn't be able to do it. Ultimately, you will be compelled to get up and go to the toilet. You will be compelled to go get something to eat. You will be compelled to go relate to your friends. You will be compelled, you know, if you need a place to live and you need clothes to wear and you aren't born into a rich family, you're going to be compelled to go get a job. It's pointing out ultimately that it's totally impossible for you to sit and do nothing for the rest of your life. You are the compelled expression of existence, the compelled dance of existence. And in some cases, you will be expressed as being depressed or anxious, or maybe you will be expressed as having an addiction. And your responses to that will be expressed. And whatever sense of life that you have, and whatever sense that you have of that depression, that anxiety, and that addiction, will automatically present themselves, and you will behave in whatever way makes most sense to you. And all of that is the dance of this larger mysterious happening of existence. And more than that, for each and every apparent person, it's different. Your various interests, your various concerns, your various abilities, and your various lack of abilities, these are different from, it's a different assembly from each and every other apparent person. And all of that is the expression of this totally unexplainable happening of this moment. So, again, to acknowledge that the happening of this moment is just presenting itself, and to acknowledge that it cannot be explained in any true way, and to acknowledge that everything we are, whatever we seem to be, does not exist as anything separate from this happening. It's an expression of this happening. It doesn't mean you're going to sit around doing nothing. It means life is going to express you in whatever way it's going to express you. And it can even be that acknowledging this larger, totally mysterious happening of the moment, even if you acknowledge that very clearly, it can still present you in any number of ways. It can present you as being very relaxed about the whole thing. It can present you as wanting to explore the world of health and what it means to be healthy as an apparent human being, to be apparently healthy as an apparent human being. It can present you as having an addiction and being concerned about having that addiction, and your response will be to go to a program to try to get out of that addiction. And all of that is ultimately the totally unexplainable dance of the Great Spirit, or the universe, or the unformed ocean of existence, or the river of life. To acknowledge the larger mysterious dance of existence simply is the acknowledgement that it's going to present apparent you in whatever way it's going to present you, that it's not your personal doing. It's not saying that if you acknowledge the greater mysterious dance of existence, you will then, from that point on, sit down and do absolutely nothing, or you will be totally unconcerned about anything that happens, or you will avoid having an addiction, or you will avoid being anxious. It's not saying that. It's saying that whatever this is going to play out in whatever way it plays out, and none of it is anyone's personal doing. All right. Another person has written in saying, "Daryl, I hope your travels were enjoyable. I've been reading your books recently and have taken your recommendation to sit quietly without purpose. There is no question to me that everything is changing. While I see the point that forms are changing too, it's hard to see why belief in forms is false. It's true they aren't what we have thought they were, but falsity for me arises at a seemingly different standard than I am currently seeing. But more important to me is your assertion that we don't control anything in our lives. If all you mean is that we don't determine our interests, abilities, etc., then I get it. But it seems like we have some effect on the results of our lives. What do you recommend as a way to see the lack of control more clearly?" I don't recommend anything. I don't recommend cultivating the idea that you have lack of control. I've never said anything like that. I'm simply pointing out the acknowledgement that everything in this moment is simply a totally unexplainable happening presenting itself. it's a happening simply happening, and there's no way of saying anything ultimately true about it, and that we don't exist as anything apart from that totally unexplainable happening. We're also a totally unexplainable happening, simply happening spontaneously. Now, when I say that, you know, if we look at our daily life, that we don't influence any of our life, all I mean is that we can acknowledge that we don't create our basic needs, we don't create our basic interests, or any of our interests, we don't create our abilities, and we don't create our lack of abilities. So we don't create the basic things, the main motivations in our life, our needs and our interests and our concerns, and we don't create the abilities that we have to follow those needs and interests and concerns. So we don't create any of what we are, so we ultimately don't create anything else. And that's a very simple acknowledgement. Anybody can acknowledge that. As far as I'm concerned, there really isn't anything else there to acknowledge. This doesn't leave me with the feeling, you know, it doesn't leave me with a tight focus on some notion that, oh, there's a me that doesn't have control. This is again simply the acknowledgement that all of life is not specifically a poor little me, that it's a greater unexplainable happening simply presenting itself. So as this person says in his writing here, he says, what's important to me is your assertion that we don't control anything in our lives, and if all you mean is that we don't determine our interests, abilities, etc., then I get it. And yes, that's all I mean. As Schopenhauer pointed out in the late 1800s, you can do whatever you want, but you don't create your wants. So that's a very simple acknowledgement, and from that acknowledgement, you can then say that you aren't influencing the movement of life, because the very thing that moves you, your wants, aren't your creation. So if you don't create your basic motivation to move in life, you're not ultimately really creating anything else in life. Those wants, those prime motivators, are the expression of life itself, and not your personal little creation. Again, it's a very simple acknowledgement. Einstein read that statement of Schopenhauer's when he was 17, and in that moment he realized that he was an expression of the universe. Alright, and lastly, a person has written in, not with a question, but just with an expression of appreciation. So he's written, "Dear Daryl, I want to express my thanks and appreciation for your writing and your talks. I heard your interview on Being Ordinary about a year and a half ago, then read your book about a year ago," and I would imagine the book he's referring to is Dismantling the Fantasy. "Although I have two books out there, Dismantling the Fantasy and Essence Revisited, and I consider those to be companion pieces. To me, they present a complete non-dual perspective. Your language and teaching are so clear, direct, and unencumbered. It allowed me to step away from the cultural clutter and magical thinking that confused me in the various traditions I was involved with, and to finally notice that I was in fact getting it, and that it was all much simpler, and in a way disappointing, than the stuff I kept hearing people say, which I knew on an intuitive level, But I kept looking in all sorts of weird directions and expecting all sorts of ridiculous things. The result is that the getting it is steadily deepening and that the seeking has totally and completely stopped, which always sounded mysterious, but in fact is just very ordinary. I have been able to get on with my life and in some ways have actually dived into the storyline in a way that I never could before. Your emphasis on the unique expression of each individual helped me to stop struggling against my life, my abilities, my lack of abilities, my interests, inclinations, and instead to recognize them. I'm not a crazy inspired saint. I'm not having over the top, earth-shattering realization experiences, but the realization has happened and is happening with steady, clear simplicity and sometimes in profoundly moving ways. I understand now that what's happening to someone else really can't ever apply to me, which is the end of a particular kind of suffering. So in addition to getting on with my life and my storyline and trying to be as effective as I can with what I have, I also recognize the infinite, magical, creative, and baffling aspects of whatever it is that's going on here. Finally, I want to express my appreciation for your style, both the website and book and the way you present yourself in images, etc., is all keyed to communicate simplicity and also a contemporary quality that sets aside the nostalgia and orientalism that have always troubled me in spiritual scenes. Your writing is very clear, plain, and brief. That's so hard to do. So again, thanks. So once again, this person is expressing that in an acknowledgement of the infinite, magical, creative, and baffling aspects of whatever it is that's going on here in this moment, this is not a dismissal of the world of thought. It's not a dismissal of our particular storyline. It's not a dismissal of our day-to-day activities. It's not saying that we should go off to a cave and do nothing at all for the rest of our lives. It's not saying that the everyday world is to be dismissed. It's the acknowledgement that everything in this moment is the dance of something that can never actually be explained. And that everything that's being expressed is its legitimate expression. There isn't any way of ultimately truly saying what any of it is. It's just a big, unexplainable happening, simply happening. There's no way of saying what it actually is. So there's no way of saying that there's anything wrong with it. Everything that we are is an expression of this happening. We're not making it happen. We don't cause ourselves, and therefore we don't cause anything else to happen. We don't cause our basic needs, our interests, our concerns, our abilities, or our lack of abilities. So we're not causing our own motivation, and we're not causing our abilities to follow through on that motivation. So we're not causing anything else to actually happen either. We're simply a portion of this greater mysterious dance of existence. Since no one is making it happen, no one is doing it incorrectly. Everything is the legitimate expression, the correct expression of this totally unexplainable happening. And again, this is just from this non-dual sensibility. If you relate to it, that's great. If you don't relate to it, that's great too. There'll be some other sense of existence that you relate to. So the acknowledgement of this totally unexplainable happening of this moment is also the acknowledgement of the apparent world of form, because we're not going to get rid of the apparent world of form. The unformed happening of this moment appears to have form. Even though we can acknowledge that all those forms are changing, there is still the appearance of form. And that is the expression, the legitimate expression of this totally unexplainable happening. So the apparent thoughts that arise, the apparent thoughts that we have on an everyday basis, the apparent activities that we participate in on a day-to-day basis, the apparent sensibility, sense of life that we have, the apparent doing that exists within the world of apparent form, all of that is the legitimate expression of this totally unexplainable happening. As the Taoists say, nothing is wrong, everything is right, everything is correct, everything is the correct expression of this totally unexplainable happening, simply happening. So this non-dual acknowledgement is not only the acknowledgement of this totally unformed, unexplainable happening, it's also the acknowledgement of the apparent world of form, and within that apparent world of form, it's also the acknowledgement that each and every apparent form is unique. It's different from every other apparent form in existence. In the same way that no two snowflakes are identical, no two people have an identical pulse rate, no two people have the identical skin composition, no two people have the same breath rate. Each of us is unique. Each of us is different. No two people walk in the same way. As science apparently increases its ability to monitor the process that a human being is, we're discovering that each and every apparent human being is unique. That means different from each and every other human being. So not only is this non-dual acknowledgement, an acknowledgement of the totally unexplainable, unformed happening of this moment, this happening simply happening on its own, it's also the acknowledgement of this world of apparent form, and it's the acknowledgement of the unique or different expression that each and every one of us is. Each and every one of us, each and every apparent person, is the legitimate expression of existence. And we will be expressed differently to every other apparent human being. That is our legitimate expression. Each of us will have a unique sense of life, even though it might be similar to someone else's sense of life. So you can have 100 different people acknowledging a non-dual sensibility. For each and every specific person within the world of apparent form, each person has a unique sense of that non-duality. And each and every person has a unique way of expressing that. And so it is with every other apparent human being. So not only is it an acknowledgement, as this person puts it, of the infinite or the unformed, the infinite, magical, creative, and baffling aspects of whatever is going on here, it is also the acknowledgement of your particular story, your particular apparent life journey, and it's also the acknowledgement that you will deal with life within that world of apparent form. Each and every one of us will address life with whatever gifts life seems to have given us. Whatever abilities and sensibilities life has given us within that world of apparent form. So we will have apparent thoughts, we will have apparent needs, we will have apparent interests, and we will function in relation to those apparent needs, interests, concerns, and thoughts with the only apparent abilities that we seem to have. And all of that is ultimately a totally unexplainable happening, simply happening on its own. From this non-dual perspective. To acknowledge this totally unexplainable happening, and to acknowledge that we are an expression, a portion of that totally unexplainable happening, does not guarantee anything. It doesn't say that there's a specific result from that acknowledgement. It's simply saying that life will play out in whatever way it plays out. And the natural expression of life is a mixed bag of things. For each one of us, we will have moments of pleasure and moments of pain. We will have moments of clarity and moments of confusion. We will have moments of joy and moments of sorrow, because this unexplainable dance of existence has no particular form. Whatever it seems to be now is moving on to something else. And we ultimately have no say in that. Even somebody without a non-dual sensibility acknowledges that they're not in total control of existence. It's just a fact. So that brings us to the end of the questions and comments that have come in over the last couple of months. Again, thanks to everyone who sent in a comment or a question. Thanks to Marcus and Brett for my time in England. Thanks to everyone who took part in the retreat and the weekend seminar. I had a great time. I wish everyone listening only good things for the coming month. However, I know it's going to be a mixed bag of things. And whatever happens is the natural expression of life being life. So until next time, take care. Bye.